Call your wife on the cell phone and have her hold the phone out in front of the speaker.
Pulling the swing. Pulling the swing. Pulling the swing. Pulling the swing set show.
Come on. You gotta stop that one.
Screwing up.
Hi, and welcome to today's edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is the edition of Wednesday, February 4th, 2004. My name is Link Fesman, and if you are just catching us for the first time, please take just a moment to join us on our IRC channel so that we can all have a great conversation while we're talking back and forth here at the tech show. You can grab that by putting your favorite IRC client to our server, the linuxlink.net, and joining us up on channel pound tech show. And we'll be right back after these messages.
What do you think?
Hi folks, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or I wonder if they would review my product? Or why don't they talk about this? Or maybe I sure would like to support these fellas somehow? Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining Channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux users group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LV Lug member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal of Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux users group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together.
Hey! Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. This is our Wednesday, February 4th, 2004 edition of the Tech Show, and we seem to be having a few technical problems. This time, nothing big enough to shut the show down, I guess, but...
Dan is wired. That's the problem.
Yeah, what it is our Dan, the controller, is a little bit wired up from playing too much... well, what is it that you were playing tonight, Dan?
Zelda.
Too much Zelda.
Zelda and sugar, too.
Yeah, that'll do that to a guy, I hear. And, boy, oh boy. Do you ever get the feeling that, you know, you're really prepared for something, and then all of a sudden you get put on the spot, like, a second and a half after the show starts? Well, that's pretty much how I feel tonight. Again, we're doing our... Wait, do we know what number of tech show this is?
18.
23. That's coming up. 18, but 18 is a long...
I think it's 18 right now.
That's a pretty long run, man. And speaking
and
of long
runs...
He said
it would never last.
Yeah, he said it would never last. And speaking of long runs, I haven't had a chance to talk to Dan about this yet, but I thought, you know...
Wait. Did you introduce the rest of us?
No,
first?
I haven't gotten there for yet. Just hang with me. I wanted to run this by Dan. I think that we should poll all our two listeners that we have live and see if they think that we should change the promo a little bit. Like I said, speaking of long...
I'm in agreement with changing the promo, too.
I think we should split it in half and put the other half about halfway through. Because if you're listening on the stream... after we do the show, you come in the middle, you don't know anything what's going on.
Yeah, well, it was fine if Dan would have left it like I had it. But, you know, he's got to have his 4-minute exposition about free software on the end of it. And I was just trying to get him to email us, you know, man.
You know what? I like your idea, Alan. I think that's the kind of forward thinking we need on this show. And I'm not even going to acknowledge Link's crappy response there. That was
mean I get a raise now?
What?
Does mean I get a raise?
You get a raise. Double your salary.
Get his penny back, right?
Double your salary.
Make up for being docked for last week.
Right. But at any rate, like I said before, my name is Link Fesnan, and I am one of the hosts, anyway, for your show. And the other two are, of course, and we don't go by the term co-hosts here. We are all the hosts. And we have your favorite, Dan Washko, sitting over there in the corner. Hi, Dan.
How you doing? I don't mind calling Alan a co-host. Or a no-show host.
Yeah,
like
a no-show,
last week.
Yeah.
Last week it was a no-show,
ever
yes.
And popular Alan Metzler, who always has so much to talk about. Thank you, Alan.
That's a great pause I put in there, just for the effect. What?
You hear crickets chirping over my shoulder.
Hey, where's your wife tonight?
You know what? I don't know. I don't see her on the
maybe,
chat. Or
maybe your workstation crashed again. Maybe.
Oh, jeez, I hope not, man. That would really suck. But that's something we'll get into later. Right now, I wanted to just open it up to news. Does anybody have any new news? Alan is the man with the new news.
I usually have news, but I don't have any news this week.
Which means Alan didn't get on.
Because I just got on 2 minutes
ago.
Oh,
he didn't
have
a chance to
get on news.
I didn't have a chance to get anything.
Before he got on.
No Newage Forge today.
Well, I'll tell you what. Something that I noticed that was pretty cool. A couple of things, actually. Not that I have them in front of me, but I'll just wing it. Have you guys been looking at, News Forge or... What's the other ones? Root Prompt and Slash Dot and stuff like that for the last week?
Apparently Alan hasn't. He's silent.
Not enough.
Well, apparently not, but, you know. If you've been paying attention to any of those news aggregators, what I have been seeing is a whole lot of articles lately about how cool Linux is getting. You know what I mean? Articles about all these countries that are pushing to adopt open source and... And,
that one you had posted with the Portland, on it. That's actually one that I was thinking about talking about, but I didn't get a chance to really read into it enough. I thought that was a really interesting article.
They have some
that being
they have some really good
activity
ones
out there.
Yeah, and in that article they mentioned there's 3 or 4 different countries that are pushing open source, and then of course you got all the really good news from the LW, the Linux World Expo. About IBM really pushing Linux hard right now and moving all their desktops over to Linux, and a bunch of other companies are filing suit. And I've just seen a whole lot of news in the past week pertaining to, you know, companies and countries pushing towards a more open source software interest, which, of course, I think is, you know, really great news. And the other thing that I wanted to make mention of is that we had early on in our Linux user group, we had a guy by the name of Tom Walsh that used to come, and I just ran into his art. He has an article published on NewsForge.
Oh, really?
That I just ran into, and it's about setting up Myth TV. So any of you who are local to the area and play with Myth TV and have seen that article, well, Tom Walsh is a local guy who actually did attend quite a few of our early LUG meetings, and I just thought that was
those
interesting.
Were the Linux basement meetings.
Yeah, the Linux basement meetings, exactly. And that was a kind of a noteworthy thing that I was going to mention tonight. Anybody else, Dan?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, the Tom Walsh email. Now, did he email us, or did you email him and carbon copy me on that?
He initially emailed me, and I replied, and carbon copied you on the reply.
Because I felt like I came in sideways in a conversation. I couldn't determine whether I deleted an email or not.
You're really sideways in the conversation. No, he emailed me, and I carbon copied you on it because I figured you'd recognize the name as being an old LUG member.
I know who Mr. Walsh is.
Yes.
But once a LUG member, always a LUG member.
Absolutely, because, you know, we don't have any dues or any of that kind of stuff, so pretty much if you come once, you're a charter member for life. And
I heard there's been a vote for a president, Randy P., his first order of business will be to exact dues.
Yep.
And then swap over to Microsoft.
Yep.
Lehigh Valley Unix services for Windows.
Yep.
That's right.
True.
That's funny. So what has everybody been doing this week?
Unfortunately for me, not a whole lot. If you read my blog, it's been rather
action-packed.
Just action-packed.
Well, no, I saw you got that DVD.
I was playing around with DVD rip.
DVD rip.
Is, even though we don't advocate ripping DVDs for your own personal use.
Alan, isn't that illegal?
That's what I'm saying. The disclaimer is we don't advocate doing that. And
disclaimer, RIAA people, if you are listening, Alan really was not ripping any DVDs. He was just
merely experimenting.
He could compile the software. That's
and actually, that was the big part of it, actually, too, because I was having a problem with the one of the GTK modules.
Spit it out.
That was giving me a headache in terms of it was there, but DVD rip didn't see it, and it took several compiles before it actually got.
Oh, is this something
it.
You had to like link to a different version?
Yeah,
kind of
yeah,
thing?
It was linking to the wrong version.
Uh-huh.
Once I got that up and running, it actually worked. I was a little confused. You know, the documentation is really good, but it also makes a lot of assumptions that you have worked with this transcode several times before, and I've never done that. So I did rip a DVD, and I'm looking at it. I'm trying to convert it to a VCD just to see whether or not I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
On it. I'm looking at this file, and I'm like telling it to split it into two 700 meg pieces. I'm getting one that's like 780 and another one that's like 400. And I must have ripped like four times before I finally, you know, got a little intelligence behind me and went and looked on the mailing list. And once I found on the mailing list that it actually will burn, that even though it says that it's larger, it does actually fit on a 700 meg CD. It does. I guess it does
a little
bit of
compression or something.
I guess so, because I did rip one and I watched it last night, and you know the quality's not that bad on it, and it did, you know, pick it up. It was a nice break on it. Maybe it was like a second or two of the movie that wasn't there on it, but it was, you know, good for playing around with.
Cool. So like if we get some training videos or something going on for like
then
you can be our master duplicator and hook us up with some DVDs and stuff, right?
We'll attempt it, yes. Actually, the only thing I can burn onto is regular discs because I don't have a DVD burner.
Uh-huh.
And all over the world, carnivore servers are burning up. And Alan's name just going right to the IRA.
Oh, my God, they'll get my collection.
Actually, tomorrow there'll be a knock on your door.
That's right.
Probably, yes. But
and it'll be not just them, but the BSA will be tailing right
behind
them.
Yeah, the BSA and Randy P. and the RIAA.
Well, the BSA can come after me. I have no pirated software.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying, too. Like, I run, you know, yes. I don't run any Microsoft I'm sorry, anything in month.
Yeah,
that's what I run on, man.
And they drop a dubbed Windows XP Professional CD. And
as they're fumbling through your CD collection, right?
Ooh, I do have a copy of XP, but it is locked to the machine. You know, it came with the Sony disc.
I think that'd even be funny if they tried that crap in my house because, like,
you'd be looking at them going, "What are you going to run it on?"
Yeah, what are you going to run it on? I got a couple of Spark stations over there. They're not going to run it. I got a HP 9. You know what I mean? The only thing it's going to run on is a couple of my Linux boxes, but then again, you know, my Linux boxes to run XP would just be ungodly.
Most of my machines would be the same thing. It would be like 2 hours to boot.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be ludicrous.
But another program I did play with over the weekend was Check Install. So I don't know if you guys use that.
What is that?
It sort of replaces the Make Install, and you can actually build packages out of it. Which was really good for me because, you know, I was recompiling things several times. I wanted to remove what I had so I make sure I wasn't screwing up even more. But you basically, you do your configure, you do your make, and then instead of make install, you run check install, and it asks a few questions, and it basically builds a Slack package for you.
Cool.
Or you can build a Debian package or an RPM if you're so inclined with those things.
Nice little utility.
It is very nice. I'm going to start using it for just about everything now. Compile stuff.
You know, that's something that I really been thinking about doing a lot myself is doing that, trying to figure out how to build Slack packages. And I'll have to, you know, pick Dan's brain on that because I know he does that stuff for me all the time. But I usually get stuck in situations where, like, I don't have the time to piss with that kind of thing. And
he spends all day developing his desktop.
Man,
I don't know if this makes true Slack packages or if it just makes a very easy uninstall package. But I mean, it's basically you answer like two questions, and it does the rest for you. So it's a really neat little program.
Awesome.
Now you can make RPMs and Debian packages.
And Debian packages as well, you know, with it.
No, I've never tried any of those other things.
I just found out about it. I think it's actually on the extras disk. Disk 2.
I've been using it for like 3 or 4 years now.
Okay.
Now, some people on Linux packages say that it doesn't do permissions properly.
Okay.
Or the way that they would like them, be strict permissions. But for the packages I use and I send the link.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with anything that you sent me for a package.
Sometimes I'll make them by hand.
Well, you're just like, you know.
Well, that's not
the
that
sugar.
Hard.
The sugar is running down on Dan here all of a sudden.
He makes his packages by hand, man. Ones and zeros only.
Hey.
Ones and zeros.
Sometimes
ones
I'm up till 4 in the morning putting those ones and zeros in.
You look at his keyboards, man. All the keys are there, and they all look perfect except for the one and the zero is missing off of there. They're all worn down. It's
one, zero, 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 one,
a
one,
real
zero,
man code in binary, that's why. So. So anyway, what else is going on?
What's going on?
What have you been doing, Dan?
What have I been doing?
Playing Zelda.
I've been doing, making those tutorials. Tutorial videos.
That's what you're going to be doing Zelda videos now, too.
Yeah, playing Zelda. Tutorial Zelda videos. And, of course, DEF CON 1 took a significant amount of time out of the Saturday.
Yes.
Oh.
But at least they have a Slackware Samba server now. Dun, dun,
cool.
Dun. And they have... That's a speedy system. They have... Do they have a gig of RAM in there?
Damn near. It was 700 plus megs.
That's right.
730 megs.
We set them up with KMail.
That's a lot, man.
Individual desktops, KMail, with spam assassin, spam filtering. So, what was it? I went through to one guy's email. He had 168 emails, about 10 of them were non-spam. Oh, it's terrible. But no, when I put on...
That can rot.
I put on the spam assassin. It got rid of about half of them, automatically picked them up. So, I figure... If we set them up with a bunch of blacklists some way, we can get a lot more. Yep.
Cool.
And I guess we're going to be
what
talking
about... What
about
just, like, filter them into a spam folder or something?
They do get filtered into a spam folder. But for the ones that don't get picked up as spam, figure out a way to put them into a blacklist form. That's another thing. And then the other stuff, the video recording stuff, we're going to talk about later on in the show.
Yeah.
So stick around.
Yeah. What he said. Video recording stuff.
Well,
do we want to jumping into that stuff and
well, we got 6
my
minutes.
Workstation stuff, or do you want to
go ahead
you
and
know?
Talk about your workstation stuff?
Well, I can do more than 6 minutes, man.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter if we take a break.
we just take a break and then we'll hit 16 minutes.
All right. You want to take a break?
No one's paying for it.
Now I gotta get a song ready. Hold on, I didn't get a song ready yet.
See, they're staying slacking off again, man.
Well, that's because of
he's like looking over me when the show's getting ready to start, right? He's looking over me, going, "Yeah, like how much time do we have?" I'm like, "Dan, it's already 9:01, dude." Oh no!
Hey, you know, it's that whole kernel thing.
The compiling of the kernel.
How many other radio shows do you know that have to compile a kernel 30 seconds into the show, right?
Speaking of that, it's still running over here. Going for the 2.61 kernel and trying to figure out why I'm having boot problems with it. The infamous, what is it, cannot mount root file system.
Yeah,
VFS. Cannot find partition.
VFS error, mount root partition kind of thing.
But hopefully it will be getting to that. And you know what? I know what I can do. I can hit for 6 minutes. Talk while I try and find a song. Speaking of
spam, speaking of that workstation,
I was just talking about. Was I talking about a workstation? No, I was talking about the server, email on the server. Email. There's a workstation at work today that we found out didn't have antivirus software on it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right. Somehow that one got missed.
It's a Windows workstation, right?
It was terrible. Not only we put on the antivirus and scanned the antivirus, found two viruses, two Trojans, cleaned those off, and then I grabbed SpamBot, downloaded that, and ran SpamBot. Holy crap. It just ran. There was like pages and pages of crap spam by.
The first thing it finds is like there's like 5,000 different things it looks for, and then if you download the upgrade to it, because the package it initially download doesn't have all the things to look for, so you do the upgrade, and it goes for like 15,000 things that it looks through.
I know. I ran it twice, and it just, oh, it was just a nightmare. All the crap that got in. And I was thinking to myself, because the person, one of the new people at work, I had talked to her because we had gotten a report back from this guy that had Symantec software screenshot, and I was like, well, we don't run Symantec's antivirus. What the hell's going on here? So I contacted her, and she said that she ran the web scan from Symantec, and it did pick up a virus, and that she had said that the antivirus that we've been using, she's found a couple instances where it didn't pick up viruses that were found on the machine. And of course my first question was it set up properly? What's going on? So when I went down and looked at this machine, I saw that there wasn't any antivirus on it at all.
Right.
So, which would explain why.
Why wasn't there anything?
But you know, I was thinking, she had said that there's a couple other machines that are doing the same thing, but they have the antivirus installed. It really sucks because this is the second antivirus package that if it's not finding all the viruses, then we kind of have a problem.
Right.
And I hate to go down the route of McAfee or Symantec because they just muck your system up so bad.
Dude, does anybody besides me have this kind of conspiracy theory attitude that you're thinking it may...
We're back.
All right, and we're back.
Sorry about that.
Just a minute or two of dead air there. Some kind of problems.
Please stand by.
With our But you know, it always seems to happen too when we're trying to get another MP3 file in the lineup, you know, to play or something like that. I mean, that's where we stopped doing the sound effects and stuff.
Well, hopefully there'll be a new version coming out. And I was told that the new version works off of a different MP3 engine.
Really?
Or Lame or something like that.
Isn't there, like, we're using Icecast, right?
Right.
Now, isn't there a, I can't even remember the name of it, another program, sounds like Icecast, that works with Icecast that we can do the same kind of thing with? Broadcast live, sort of?
Shoutcast,
there you go.
No, Shoutcast is a server.
No, Shoutcast is...
a server.
For MP3s, there's another one. Black Ice or something like that.
I thought Black Ice was another kind of server.
Right, but it's one that you can push live, a live stream with it.
I don't know, we'll look into it. But you were saying about your conspiracy theory.
Yes, my conspiracy theory, and hopefully we can get all this appended together so it makes sense to you. Is there anybody out there that has this kind of conspiracy theory thought like I do, that Symantec and what was the other one?
McAfee,
yeah. Symantec and McAfee are like have some little hacker dudes on their payroll.
On the payroll, yes. Yeah. I believe that too.
On their payroll, like stuck in some, you know, old burnout building somewhere in the basement that are coding some of these viruses to go around, because it just seems awfully convenient that, like, as soon as their sales start dipping down a little bit, some big worm comes ripping across the market and infecting people's PCs. And, of course, like, you know, nothing they have will detect that new kind of worm that's
exactly,
out. You know what I mean?
Nothing yet. But if you pay a little extra money.
That's right. If you get that $20 update that they're selling you, you know, conveniently right at the right time, if you get that $20 update, man, that'll clean it right up for you.
I have to believe that at times.
I really think that, you know.
Too convenient.
It is. Even if it's not something that happens in every instance, it's got to have happened a couple of times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just too convenient for it to be any other way. But,
Well, the big one now is the MyDoom one.
Right, the MyDoom one, which, of course, they're blaming on...
I think Sko wrote that one, actually.
Yeah, they're blaming it on open source people. Get this right, this is a virus, MyDoom. This is a virus which infects Microsoft Windows computers to launch a denial-of-service attack against Sko's website.
Now, they also say supposedly hit Microsoft on the 6th.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
And they're blaming this virus on Linux when Sko has this gigantic lawsuit on everything Linux right now. I think that Sko wrote it. You know what I mean? If I was a betting man, I would put money that it came out of their department somewhere, that they wrote it to what... Because, really, what are they losing off of a denial-of-service attack? They're not selling anything anymore.
They're not selling anything off their website.
They have no viable product at this point in time except for their multi-billion-dollar lawsuits that they filed. Nobody wants to buy their crap anymore because they're pissed at them, you know? They're pulling all this whiny kitty crap. And so what if their website goes down? They're not going to lose any business because of that. But if they can go out on the air...
They can milk it for a lot of PR.
Yeah, if they go out on the air, man, they can milk that sucker for all kinds of PR. Oh, those Linux people, they're only hackers and all the open source. Because not just Linux, right? They got plans in the market
to go against the
BSDs and everybody else, you know? So... I don't know. That's another little conspiracy theory going on there.
The only problem with that is they'd actually have to have programmers left at Sko to be able to write something like that.
All right, you got me.
Now, conspiracy theory would probably equate more towards the antivirus vendors themselves as wanting to propagate viruses. Because if Microsoft
Windows
Empire...
This feeling I should have like a tinfoil hat on soon.
Yeah, right.
What?
We should get like a tinfoil hat on soon.
Picture when they're all standing together, a little tinfoil hat.
I mean, how many people really...
The conspiracy show.
How many people really run antivirus software on their Linux system, unless it's a mail server delivering mail?
Well, see, that's another thing that I was...
Windows boxes.
That I was going to bring up. But a lot of people
Same with Macs.
Yeah, I've seen the ads, though, for a lot of people, for a lot of new companies, quote-unquote, that are springing up trying to sell antivirus software for Linux. Now, personally, I cannot think of a good reason to run such a product. You know what I mean? I'm not talking like, I'm not talking about a virus filter if you're running a mail server, okay? That's a whole different thing. I'm talking about running antivirus software, and I have seen several packages out for Linux, some kind of this and that antivirus software to run on your Linux box, and I really don't see a need to do that. You know what I mean? Like, well, I mean, there's a program called
I've seen it in the back of, you know, like Linux Journal.
There's like
stuff.
A root check program that I run. Give me a second, and I'll get you the name actually.
I've never seen a need to run antivirus on any other platform than Windows.
Other than Windows, yeah.
Now, the old Macs had occasional problems, particularly boot sector viruses on infected floppy disks. Yeah. But again, they didn't really have the extent of problems that Windows has. And there's a lot of speculation that it's even going to get worse this year. Worser. Is that the word?
Worser.
Was this going to be more a lot worse. More problems this year than there was last year? And last year was terrible. My boss was saying the other day, we have a vendor that does our antivirus for the email. It blocked like 3,000 infected emails in the past week. That's ridiculous.
You know what? And I really hate to say this, right? But it's true. At this point in time, I really think that if your computer is infected by these emails, that you deserve it. Okay? I really think that. Because this stuff has been happening over and over and over again. And if you are so stupid that, you know what I mean, that you can't find a way to not get these viruses through your emails, then you have a problem. Similarly, I really believe that if someone comes in and catches your computer sending out virus emails, then you should lose your computer privileges, man. You should, you know what I mean? Like if your ISP narrows a virus trace down and finds out that you're sending out spam virus emails, they should shut your damn account off.
Yeah, for at least some point in time, but, you know, and let you know why.
They should, you know what I mean, and make a fee to reinstate it or something. Trace it back to you. If you're sending out infected emails, bam, shut it off.
All right, now, I've been very lucky at work because the NT box I have to use for the mail at work, doesn't have any virus stuff on it at all.
No antivirus or no viruses?
Well, it has neither. no antivirus and no virus.
And where do you work,
either.
Alan? Well, we point in your direction.
Well, no.
Which
the,
I find amazing.
The company screens the emails before they ship them out. Cool. So I'm leaving most of the headaches to them. Unfortunately, the version of NT that I'm using, I forget what version is, but it actually runs off of a Sun card inside my Sun box.
Oh, cool.
And it's really nice, exception of trying to put any sort of virus software on it, kills it every single time.
Uh-huh.
I have no clue why, but it will do like one thing and then it will die. And basically you have to reinstall the whole thing. So we just decided not to install it anymore. And, you know, for 3 or 4 years now, knock on wood over here, I'm not going tomorrow and it won't work. But yeah, I've been really lucky. But then again, I don't, you know, I'm smart enough not to open up attachments.
Right.
You know, that's pretty straightforward as far as I'm concerned. My email address isn't out, you know, at work isn't out there for the entire world to see. I'm sure there's a lot of crap that comes through, but also, like I said, the company, you know, scans a lot of that stuff out.
That email address would be president@microsoft.com.
Now, I'm gonna play a little bit of an advocate here, and also go out on a limb on something too. Before we break, but now you're talking about punishing the user, and I can see that to an extent, but there also needs to be some culpability to the software design.
Absolutely.
But what I'm thinking also is on my way home from work today, I heard that radio thing again, the radio announcement for that computer training company about some kind of Microsoft and Cisco test that you can take to see if you qualify, which you probably pass no matter what, for getting some training. And
well, sure, if you give $400, they give you a certificate, right?
But they keep saying in all these commercials for these training places is, you know, get Microsoft MCSE, MCSA, no computing experience necessary to get in. You know, and
well, it's
that's
just because you have to memorize questions.
Right, but think about that. No computer experience necessary. Most of the people that grab a computer out of Staples or Best Buy or everything don't really know what they're getting into to begin with.
Certainly.
So, you know, think about it. One of the complaints with Linux and just about every other operating system aside from Apple is it's too complex or you got to learn some stuff to use it. Well, if you don't have to learn stuff to use it, then you don't understand how it works, and you don't understand why you're getting infected. You probably don't even know you are infected.
Right.
And there's...
I think most of the time, yeah, that you don't know that you're infected.
Right. You
that's
don't know
still,
that you're
that's
infected.
That's still end-user culpability then, right?
It is end-user... To an extent, it's end-user culpability. But I'm sure most people don't even understand this stuff. Like, what's a virus? Well, I get an email. Here, my friend sends me an email. I look at it. Well, there's nothing in it. I don't
get
it.
I don't.
But they don't understand
like,
it.
I don't understand the intricacies of the modern combustion engine. That does not mean that in my spare time at home, I have a sign on my garage door that says mechanic. You know what I mean? I stay the hell out of this stuff. If you don't understand the computer, and you're causing problems with it, you know, I think that's your fault, and they should keep them the hell off of it.
Or at least have relatives that know how to fix it.
No, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? If these people that are, and you know, there are a lot of computers that are rooted or owned, quote-unquote, that are available by hackers to go do their things on and send their virus spams out and the emails and everything. And I think if your ISP catches you doing that on your computer, it should be your fault.
Yeah.
And they should terminate your, you know, your access.
Well, they're actually doing that. They're terminating people's access when they determine that they have an infected machine. They are starting to do that.
I think that's an outstanding idea because it's going to, you know what I mean? It's got to do one of two things. It's going to either frustrate the person enough so that they don't use the computer anymore, at least on the internet where they can bother anybody else, you know what I mean? Which is fine. Because if they're not going to use it responsibly, like, you know, it's like guns. Like, you have to take a safety course for guns. Why can't, you know, you should have to take some kind of safety course for, you know, Microsoft Windows. That's what I'm getting at. Or two, they're going to become a more responsible computer user, and they're going to watch their stuff so that it doesn't bother anybody else. And, you know, I just think that's a good idea, and I wish that people would push that a little bit more.
But, you know, you don't just need antivirus. You need antivirus, you need a firewall, and you need spyware all installed on the same machine. That's three different applications to protect your machine. And then you're going to need the fourth application to manage the resources that those three applications take over.
Right, yeah.
And then something to clean up after all those. So there's five applications to run on top of Windows.
Sure.
Now, I was in the store the other day.
Or in my parents' case, having me come over to run those three applications for them.
Now, I was there in the store, Wegmans, the other day, which has a new copy of Linux Magazine, which I need to get when I get paid tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, there was a magazine in there, and it talked about the new features of Longhorn. Now, apparently, Longhorn isn't going to have built-in antivirus and it has a firewall, but it's going to have no built-in antivirus, but hooks for antivirus software so the vendors can produce better integrated products to protect the systems. Which makes me think, you know, if the antivirus vendors, if they provide hooks, now can't virus writers
can't the hackers
hook into the hooks?
Use those same hooks, or won't they start
exploiting?
It's just like the DCMA, is that it? Where they wrote the encryption software and some guy already broke it.
Mm-hmm.
He broke the Apple DMCA encryption on a Linux box. Well, what the hell good is it then?
Well, it's the same with any encryption. Once you break it once, you know, one person breaks it, it's the same as not having it at all. You know, they need the copy protections and stuff that they put out. You know, all you have to do is have one person that can get by it. even if it's something that's, you know, only one person can do. You know, it's so complicated. You only need that one.
Sure, especially if it's an open source solution, because the code, you know, whips around so fast.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a very unfortunate situation, but, you know, what are you going to do?
We never even took our break. We didn't get to talk to you about
15 minutes.
Should we try?
You want to take a break today?
Well, we don't have to take a break.
Let's just keep talking.
All right.
Let's just keep talking because, you know, we already have to merge two MP3 files together.
Nah, you know what? It's not DMCA. What is it?
DMCSS or something like that?
No, there's what's CSS. The encryption that they're using?
For DVDs? It's CSS.
The encryption that the Palladium is based off of it. Trusted computing architecture. What's that? Well, screw it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I need more Zelda.
More Zelda. More sugar.
All right, man. So what were you going to talk about? You didn't get a chance to talk about your stuff yet either, did you?
I just talked for 20 minutes about the stuff at work. I thought you wanted to talk about your workstation, and we're going to talk about the screen recording stuff. And then Alan's going to just interject when he feels like it. But I don't want to take away from the awesome stuff you have going on over there.
The awesome stuff I have going on. Well, let me tell you guys about the awesome stuff. Those of you who don't read my blog, and if you don't, it's because you suck.
And Link is the only one that actually actively posts to it.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't think I get a lot of people that read my blog, and I'm the one that actually puts stuff on there. You get messages from Dan like, oh, you know, I just noticed I haven't posted in a month, and I'm going to try really hard to post every day this week, and that's the last message you see from him for another 3 weeks, you know. And then Alan, who complains that he just doesn't have a life, so he doesn't post, piss on it, you know.
Well, if I did post every night, it would be very boring.
Hey, this is Alan.
Went to work this morning.
Watched TV today. Woo!
Got home from work. Got stuck in a traffic jam on the way home from work today. That was pretty much my day for today.
Yeah. Macaroni and cheese for dinner tonight, baby. Woo!
There you go.
Wait,
no, actually, pizza tonight.
Oh, cool. Doing better than me. I had Chinese tonight. All right, I'm getting off the subject. What did I do? For those of you who read my blog, this will be sort of a compounded revision. Anyway, Thursday, maybe, when we had the big snowstorm thing. Nice. Anyway,
yeah.
This was after the last tech show. I got a bunch of errors on my hard drive on my main Linux workstation. And it was telling me, you know, bad sector error. So, you know, I got a little freaked out, and I figured, you know, maybe it's time to replace this hard drive that's been up and spinning actively for 2 years. So I went and did that, and I started Friday. Stopped out to get a new hard drive at Staples. And, of course, you know, every time you go to Staples because they have a sale on something like a hard drive, and you go to get it, the frickin' thing isn't there. Well, guess what? I went to get it, and the frickin' thing wasn't there. Why exactly?
Just got sold.
Yeah. Why exactly? If you run a company, like, and Staples is a big company, right?
Yeah.
You know, and this happens with a lot of companies. Staples, Kmart, I've done this, Walmart. You go there because they have, like, something in an ad, buy this, you really want it. You go there, they don't have it anymore. Why?
Because they only have
if
three.
They know, yeah, that's exactly my point. If they know that they got a good deal coming out on this such and such an item, why is it that they put the freaking flyer out to 900 million people and all those people go to the same store, and at that store there's two, you know? And especially for something like a hard drive. Like, I didn't go there looking for a hard drive because, you know, I needed to have some extra space way off in the future kind of thing. Like, my hard drive broke down, and I'm a computer nerd, and I had to have a new one right freaking there. Because, you know, I just can't be, you know, and it's not to say that I don't have enough computers to let go around, you know, in my
house.
But
the sound in the room was all wrong because there was one less fan going.
It has to be running. Like, that's my main workstation that I work at. And So anyway, I'll cut it short. I went there, and they didn't have the hard drive, and I got really pissed off and walked out of the store and was probably a little bit rude to the little, I don't know, what, a 14-year-old sales kid or whatever they had following around checking for stuff for me. But, and now right next to this particular Staples, down a little bit from it, is a Walmart. So I went over to Walmart thinking, all right, there's no way in hell that Walmart is going to have a hard drive. But I'm going to stop there anyway because, you know, I'm in a foul mood, and maybe I can just blow a whole bunch of money on DVDs or something. So I stopped in there, and I'm looking around, and high and low in this Walmart. And this particular one does actually carry some computer supplies. Like, you run into some of them that just don't, you know, maybe you find a can of compressed air and a mouse, and, like, that's it. This one actually has some stuff. And believe it or not, I found three 40-gig hard drives there for $69 a piece. They're Seagate hard drives.
Cool.
So I picked one of those. You know, that's not a great price for them, but it's not a horrendously bad one either. It's
true,
decent,
yeah.
And I like Seagate. Some people don't. I would rather have Seagate than Western Digital, which is what Staples had going on. So I grabbed it, and I took it home and put it in my workstation. And now let me catch up to myself with the workstation part. This particular workstation was not only my workstation, my main workstation, but it was also my web server and, you know, and my firewall and the whole gamut of things. Like, it ran my ADSL connection. And I wanted to get away from that this time. And I've been wanting to get away from it for the longest time. And in fact, I was very envious of Dan because his main workstation was not his server. And he could do cool things with his workstation, like shut it down and reboot it, where I couldn't do that because mine was running my website, right? So I wanted to kind of split the server into things off, so I had to dig up another little box, which just happens to be almost exactly the same that Dan has. And, you know, again, I'm just like catching up to the Joneses or something, I guess. But anyway, I got all the server stuff running on the new server box, and then proceeded to start working on my new workstation. The first thing I did was rip everything apart and put the new hard drive in, which I immediately could not get to work. Old hard drive was a 20-gig hard drive. New one's a 40-gig. I'm thinking, you know, maybe I can't do LBA on this thing, or I'm not exactly sure what the problem is, but every time it's booting up, it's not seeing the hard drive. Well, I checked it out, and it was set to cable select. Okay, so I move the jumper over to master, reboot it, and it's not working, and it's not working, and it's not working. And, you know, I'm really, really irritated at this point in time and jumpy, you know, because this is my main workstation, and I can't get the damn thing to even tell me the hard drive isn't in anymore. And I get all frustrated, and I stomp around the house, and I smoke a cigar, and then I come back and look at it, and see if I can figure out, well, maybe I'll just, you know, maybe I'll have to move the jumper somewhere else or something. So I look around the corner in the box, and what do I see? I see that I forgot to, after I changed the jumper the first time, forgot to plug the power back into the hard drive.
Oh,
yeah, So I plugged the power back in, booted right up, saw the drive, and I started my install of Slackware 9.1. Fantastic install. Cannot say enough good things about it. In fact, I'm not the only person that has good things to say about it. If you check on Root Prompt and stuff, there's a couple of reviews about other guys installing Slack 9.1. Awesome, awesome install. The only problem I had with it whatsoever was the ALSA drivers. I personally do not like ALSA. I think they should throw it out. It's impossible, or at least very difficult to configure, so I just kind of bypassed that myself. I tried it one time, and it found my stuff, and as soon as I rebooted, everything was gone. So I just said piss on it, and I installed the OSS stuff. Got my workstation up and running, and was doing really good with it. And then Dan and I ran into doing some problems with this recording thing that we were doing. Right, Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
Screen recording.
And screen recording.
And are we rolling right into that, or are you finished?
Well, I'm gonna finish really, really quick, and then we can talk about screen recording because we don't have much time. But anyway, Dan and I were having some problems with the screen recording, which we'll talk about in a second, and that detracted my attention away from one last thing that I forgot to do on my workstation, which was get to be able to capture screenshots and stuff like that, because I was running. I'm running Fluxbox, and I'm running the new rocks on it, which like hijacks the desktop for some reason. Completely steals the whole thing. And if you go and do a screenshot when you have rocks pinboard running, all it does is take a picture of the background that's running on rocks pinboard, and nothing to do with your window manager at all.
Right.
Yeah. Which really pissed me off. And that's another one of my other nitpicks is why when you release new software. Like, they have a new version of ROX and a new version of XFCE, and there's everybody's saying they're all this stuff. Well, why do you, when you release them, do you break the damn features that I like to use in them? That's what I can't figure out. Because, like, the
guy with a checklist.
Yeah,
we like this feature, no more.
Well, I like the pinboard thing with ROX, and I've been using it forever and ever, and it's really cool. And I go and put it on, the new ROX, on my new workstation. And the freaking pinboard option is broken. It hijacks everything, so nothing works anymore. So now I have to use, like, the little panel strip across the top, which is all right, but it's not what I was used to. You know what I mean? And then when I figured that that wasn't working, I said, oh, maybe it's something to do with incompatibilities with Fluxbox. So I tried it on XFCE. And now XFCE, which is supposed to be all cool now because it's in a new revision, has a freaking panel up at the top of the screen that you cannot get rid of.
Hmm.
And it's uglier than crap, man. And to top it off, not only is that uglier than crap and you can't get rid of it, you can't run ROX pinboard on it either. So, like, nothing was working for me that night. So I finally decided I was going to switch back over to Fluxbox, and instead of running ROX pinboard, I was going to run the panel at the top of the screen. And I've been doing good with that ever since. Ran into a few snags with actually getting a TV tuner card set up on this mm-hmm. computer. For those of you who have not tried that yet, TV tuner cards are not that easy to get going. You got to know a lot of stuff that that I had no idea. Like, I'm looking through chipset revisions and crap. And let's just say that the BTTV driver documentation is not all that either. But anyway, rather than bore you with all the details of that, and we're running short on time anyway, I wanted to let Dan talk about the VNC recording stuff that we were doing. That was really cool.
Bum, bum, bum. Last week, we sent a request to the mailing list, lug list, about finding some way to record what you do on the Linux screen, on the Linux box,
mm-hmm.
and not just a
record like your
screen, yeah, not just a screenshot, but an actual recording, kind of like make it into a video,
movie kind of thing,
but
moving pictures,
movie, and apparently after some extensive Google searching and roping in the help of the lug, there's a complete wide open field of nothing. For Linux and screen capturing. Now, Windows and Apple have a breadth of commercial-based applications that'll do it, but nothing in Linux.
Actually,
but
there is a commercial-based application that will do it in Linux, too. However, I didn't mention it because it's a commercial application. So,
well, what's it called?
I'd have to go back and look.
All right. Anyway, we did find two that work admirably, superbly, perfect for the needs. VNC Record and VNC to SWF, which will take your VNC session and convert it into a flash file. Both only run on Unix. I've run them on Linux and on OS X. They run pretty well. Now there is a downside to VNC Record, in that by itself, it doesn't have a native export feature, so the VNC recorded session can only be played back using VNC Record Play. Mm-hmm. But it records extremely well. Now, Transcode is able to transcode the VNC recorded session into your file of choice, AVI, MPEG, whatever you have the encoder for. Now, we first encountered our main hurdle in that for some reason in a VNC record session, if that session has a browser session in there, if you are browsing a web, it'll record fine, but it'll die when you try to transcode it into an AVI file or whatever you want to encode it into. And we've replicated this problem on a number of machines. The only one I think was successful in transcoding a browser session was U-Link, and you were running a NetBSD, a VNC into your NetBSD box.
Which I was running a browser on, right.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because the video on the VNC record site on how to do this shows him transcoding a VNC session where he runs Netscape 2. So there must be something going on with Netscape or older, newer versions of browsers that really send some kind of quark into the display mm-hmm. that doesn't allow it to transcode. But what was interesting is as I dug deeper into this and watched what was going on, I noticed that transcode was calling another feature of VNC Record called Movie. And when you run that option, it exports every single frame to an XPM file where it was being converted into, a PBM file and then used by transcode. Well, Link came up with a nice little script to automate the file, changing them into a different format, and then we figured we could just use Mogrify or convert it into a JPEG or whatever. And then Link later found that using MEncode from MPlayer, he was able to take those files and put them into an AVI. Mm-hmm. And it was sweet. It ran really fast. And what was amazing about
the encoding was wicked fast.
It was. And the amazing thing was, all these files so far have been under like 3 megs in size for full motion video that mm-hmm. was captured. So we were all happy, thumbs up everywhere to go, and then the big bomb hit. We could not play this on any other operating system than Linux. Microsoft Windows Media Player did not have the codecs, or said it couldn't find the codecs to play it. Apple OS said the same thing, couldn't find the codecs. And no matter how we tried to encode this, whatever codec we used, it would never play back on any other operating system. But we had no problem playing it on Linux. And that was a big bummer. We spent a whole day messing around with that. There was no solution. Now, I have found a way to encode it on a Windows machine by taking the individual files and pulling them through a program, which I can't recall what it is now, but it would take all these separate screen captures and put them together into one big AVI. Unfortunately, it was too big of an AVI. Now, I said we've been generating files that are about 3 megs or less. This was an 80 meg AVI file for the same damn thing.
For 30 seconds worth of
I don't even think it was 30 seconds. It was terrible. 80 megs. I'm like, this is unacceptable. So my last-ditch effort, brain fart I had, was I have an iMac, I have iMovie. I have a PowerBook, I'm sorry. I have iMovie, and I know iMovie can take still images and make, you know, put them into an iMovie. I'll just set the, really low, like 0.3 seconds per frame. Let it go through, see what happens. I pull those images in. They look beautiful. I have to pull them into iPhoto first. They look beautiful. And the moment I put them in iMovie, they look like crap. And I don't understand what happened. Other images that I pull in, pictures and stuff, look beautiful. But these look like crap. I tried different resolutions, different screen sizes. Nothing worked. So I was about to call the whole idea a bust. Because we had tried VNC to SWNF, and although it did a screen capture, a screen recording, it just looked terrible. It was all pixelated. It was jittery. It didn't work too well. But I had a feeling in the back of my head, the reason why this was is because it wasn't playing back at the proper screen resolution. And sure enough, when you embed it into a web page and force the screen size, which these were 800 by 600,
yep.
you get
it looks
beautiful,
beautiful then.
It is beautiful.
We originally passed it by just because when we did the recordings, like he kept getting a little grainy, cruddy, you know, mouse turd trails following you around. And
yeah, it looked bad. But the moment we forced it, it was awesome. And it was, we almost passed it by, and it's good that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great is again, it's cross-platform in that it'll run on any Unix that you can. You just need the MING tools, MING tools, for Flash. But really simple. You run a VNC server somewhere. You can run it on your own workstation that you're currently on, and just connect to it through nesting. Mm-hmm. You can run it on another machine. Record the session. When you're done, you got a beautiful capture. And all of my captures so far have been under a meg in size. And they range from, you know, 15 to 20 seconds to about a minute of capture. And it's a really good, versatile tool for not just tutorials, but just showing anybody something. You know, you say, hey, this is how you do it. You send them the Flash file.
Click here, click here, click here.
That's it. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. I was so happy. Now, I took these screenshots, I put them into some files, made tutorials up, and I showed them to my boss, and that's exactly what she wanted. She said, that's beautiful. That's exactly what we wanted. So, you know, I'm building tutorials on our site. And what has made it possible, Link? What has made it possible? Linux, again. Thank you.
Yep.
Slackware.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Slackware shirt now. I'm feeling the love of Slackware.
You're always wearing the Slackware shirt.
I don't wash it.
Stinky.
So that's my rant.
It just stands on its own right now.
What?
It just stands on its own right now.
It compiles its own kernel.
Yeah, man.
All right. So that was Linux screen recording. If you got to check those tools out. We got to update the resource section on the blog.
Without a doubt, we need to update the resource section on the. We need to update the website on the tech show website, and the blog, and the resource section, and we need to do like some kind of major overhaul to the lug website too. I think.
And we need to work on the show.
It's getting a little stale.
30 minutes before.
Yeah.
More than 30 minutes before.
Hey, if we can just, you know, sit down and be ready 10 minutes before we go on, we probably would be all right.
Wasn't there shouting coming from downstairs?
There was, yes.
You might want to close that door before all hell breaks loose. Guns were raging through the upstairs. There's so much to do. So much to do. Is the kernel still compiling over there?
You're still compiling. You're on driver's video and all the assorted stuff that just went into that one.
All right. So that was that. We talked about the antivirus, spam, spyware. Link talked about his hardware woes. Do you want to discuss Fezzent Consulting?
I'll save that for next time.
Alan, do you want to talk about Metzler Consulting, the direct competitor to Fezzent Consulting?
Yeah. Yep, sorry.
Half the price, but twice the service? Was that the moniker?
Half the price, twice the service. Although I do like his business cards. I'll have to start posting them for it.
Ba 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 ba.
What?
Are you still working there? Or are you done type-clicking away?
I am just, you know, catching up with some stuff.
Oh, it's 8 minutes past.
Yeah,
we didn't have a song.
Late.
We had, instead of a song, we had a crash.
It was something different for this week.
Did that die at all? Or is that going to be one continuous feed so far?
It started back up, so.
Oh, it did? So it didn't crash or anything? Didn't shut down?
Didn't shut down, no.
So I just have to go in there and edit that file and just pull out the silence.
Hopefully, yeah.
And start looping it. All right. Link, did you want to talk about the amount of downloads we've had so far? The statistics?
Oh, you know what? It's in my mail. But I believe I don't know whether anybody's interested or not, but I think it's cool that we've had in our, what'd you say, it was 18 shows now?
I believe this is the 18th one.
In our 18 shows, we have had our archives, just the, I'm just talking about the audio archives, not the chat logs or anything like that. We've had them downloaded off my server some 510 times, which is really cool. So that means at least 510 shows have been listened to, or the shows have been listened to 510 times. That's, of course, a very lateral thinking in that, you know, nobody actually listened over someone's shoulder who was listening, or, you know what I mean? Or nobody actually listens live. And I know that there's some of you guys out there who actually listen live every week.
Now, it's interesting, because I was looking here on the stats, and I brought the email up that you sent me, that I was originally going to say that, boy, September 24th and November 19th shows, 3 and 2, big listening there.
No, no, those are odd files. Yep.
And it's interesting to note that people went for the MP3s significantly more than they went through the OGG files.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both of those shows, the September one had 65 downloads to the 3 OGG file downloads, and the 19th of November had 34 MP3 downloads to the 2 OGG downloads.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Damn it.
It's unfortunate because, you know, when we first started this, Dan and I were talking, and I was initially only going to publish OGG files because, you know, everybody's complaining that MP3s are, well, at the time, everybody was complaining that MP3s were a protected proprietary format. And since then, I think, you know, things have loosened up on that a little bit, and
I got good news. I just received some patches from Microsoft in my mail. So when I'm done here, I got to go update my system with those patches.
That's cool. Exactly which system are you going to update? You're going to update your Apple that you're working on there, or would you like to update your Linux box with those Microsoft patches?
I don't know. This one's from the MSDN, which I don't understand. I mean, every time I filter out another damn Microsoft something, another one comes along.
With a
how many
header.
Different MS Microsoft headers? I mean, how many different addresses do they have?
None of them are real.
Microsoft. It could be any number of
virus
computers.
Yeah,
it could be any number of virus-affected computers.
I don't know. This one's from technet.msdn.com. I thought I filtered out all the technet. No, you know what? I filtered out technet.com. Now I got to put technet.asterisk.com and asterisk.technet.com and asterisk.msdn.com.
You can just filter out asterisk.com and then you won't get any.
That would be the end of it.
You won't get any spam emails. You won't get any viruses.
Just get asterisk msn.com.
There you go. All right. At any rate, this is the end of another perfectly good Linux Link Tech Show. Thank you for listening to our Tech Show again. This is the February 4th, 2004 edition of the Tech Show. Please do us a favor and grab all your techie and geeky friends and point them at our archives and let them listen. Hopefully they'll join us next time live. And do that yourself if you're not live this time, if you can make it. Join us at least on our IRC chat channel. You can get us at the server, the linuxlink.net. Join us on channel Pound Tech Show. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Link.
Dan.
Alan. Thanks for listening.
Thank
Have
you.
A good night.
Good night.
See you next week.
Oh, no, keep talking. I forgot to pull up the closing.
Oh, keep talking.
Shindig.
Well, Dan's got to pull out our nasty bastardized version of our tech show.
Are we gonna, what's today's? Oh yeah, we're gonna have one before Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Will you be my Valentine, Alan?
They're making eyes at each other. I know you guys can't see.
Certainly.
I'll have to draw a picture or something.
Hey. I got a bottle of wine and a bathtub full of hot water. Thanks
for
listening,
everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or, maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow? Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also, catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal of Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together.